2008 seminar, lecture 11, Studies in the Field of Holistic Medicine, Alternative Medicines Open the Mind to Flow Naturally, Thought for Far Outranks Medicament in its Smooth Response, in its Effectiveness and Speed of Action. Man responds to holistic medicine found in the wilds and available to beings who listen within to know which herbs to utilize and how to utilize them. Holistic medicine has been around for a long time, and it has been the only medicine that has been available to people. And people have used this medicine effectively for thousands and thousands of years. If you would stop and think about Hippocrates, the father of medicine, it was only about 300 BC that Hippocrates came up with the father of medicine. He was the father of the idea of medicine. I'm sure they had medicines before that, they had things before that, but Hippocrates brought up the idea of people who were working on medicine, people who were being conjurers of medicine, called doctors. And that's where the term doctors began to be used relative to medicine. Before that, it was only used in the areas of philosophy or in the areas of other activities in the business life of the community. So, okay. But before Socrates, before Hippocrates, medicine was very active. The Yellow Emperor, back in the Golden Emperor, back in the Yellow Dynasty of China, 5,000 years BC, he had a book written on acupuncture and acupressure, defining the meridians of the body and telling where the meridians were and where to put pins in to bring about healing results. Really amazing. Now, they had other types of herbs. They used teas and they used mushrooms and they used things from the forest to do healing work. And over the years, people thought that certain things would work. They thought. And then they applied it, and people died. So they figured that didn't work. And then they tried other things, and that did work. And so trial and error, over thousands of years, they figured out which herbs of the field actually were functional and beneficial. Now, meanwhile, people were getting over illnesses and getting over problems without using any of the herbs of the field, and without using any help from any of the shaman or the charlatans or the people who are working with those type of things. But they didn't pay too much attention to that. The folk wisdom of all nationalities, of all cultures, it was always looked down upon. Folk wisdom was the simple wisdom, the wisdom of people who didn't know any better. And folk wisdom came from one place. It came from the thought. And so, out of the thought of these people came folk wisdom. I believe this will work. I believe that will do it. I believe these things will work. And they applied them, and when they worked, then they wrote it down. And when it didn't work, then they wrote that down. They said, this does not work. This is not beneficial. You might as well have the information so that people don't have to trial and error things that already they know don't work. But one of the things that Hippocrates came along and showed was that the doctors should be careful in using medications so that they did not use them too strong. If the medications were too strong, they killed people. If they're too weak, they didn't help. They had to be just right. And they had to know where that just right was. And that was not an easy thing for them to do, to know where that just right was. Now, how did they find out where that just right was? Trial and error, true. But also, mentally. Some doctors were very competent and very capable, even though they had no education except their own mind. And other doctors were not very good. And they listened to the doctors who were good, because they took down what the doctors who were good said works, and they applied it. Now, this is true in every culture. The American Indians used it with their shaman, and the shaman was their religious and their medical doctor, the one who handled all these things. And the things that the shaman did were very, very fascinating, very, very beneficial. But the shaman were well known for using hallucinogenics. They liked hallucinogenics. They liked to use drugs that caused you to imagine things and to dream things and to think things. And so these were used by them and still are used by the Mexicans in Mexico for treatment of many things. Many books have been written on this and have been quite Don Juan Castellanos. If you have read any of his books, he's got a whole series of them, because he went down there and talked to the shaman and learned the ancient shaman techniques for healing and for other things. But they're fascinating. I know that if you read them, you would be interested, but you would not follow them because they're not proven to be working. And many of the things that he learned under the administration of drugs, and so therefore he didn't get the full academic picture of it. He only got the mental or out-of-body picture, you know, using the drug itself. These are things that are used historically, and they're things that work and things that accomplish good. The doctors who did some amazing things were the doctors who worked with the acupuncture and acupressure. The people in China, and China was a vast country, you know, for thousands and thousands of years, and still is, the medical practitioner, that's probably too nice a word to use for him, the volunteer, the holistic teacher, the holistic medicine, yeah. The holistic medicine was done by shaman, was done by people who trained themselves in that, and they learned from the old witches that were called, you know, because they did things and marvelous things happened. And they taught that to their successors, and they carried them down year after year after year, and each successor, of course, added more talent and more understanding to what he was doing. But they used the acupuncture as a way of solving problems throughout the body. And I want to emphasize that right now, because they used acupressure and acupuncture to solve the problems in the body without any medications. They used it without any medication. What they did was to align the meridians of the body to cause the body to have harmonious energy flowing through it. That's the term that's used for that. The body is to have harmonious energy flowing through it. And this energy links with other energy, causing all things to work in harmony. And so when you had a stomach ache, if you would just have your acupuncture point to where it was supposed to be, probably not the stomach, but where it was supposed to be, you would be completely released of your stomach ache. If you had food poisoning, they knew just what to do. Well, they had remedies for everything. They knew just where to put the pin for food poisoning. Because your body has certain glands in it that receive, like the liver, that receive the poisons of the body. And if the liver is conditioned through the use of the acupressure and acupuncture system to handle it, it can handle it without being disturbed. That seems kind of unusual. Poison is going actually into the body. Now, how could that be? Well, it's that the poisons are sent directly to the liver. And the liver conditions the poisons to take out their toxic activity so that it does not destroy the body. This is quite something. Now, you've all heard of voodooism. Voodooism is quite popular over in the West Indies, and it was for many years. And voodooism was a matter of making people believe something by sticking pins into a doll or something like that to have them believe that they are being vexed, that they are being in some way controlled. And they were. They were controlled. They were controlled even if they didn't know it. Now, how could they be controlled even if they didn't know it? If they knew it, you'd recognize that it's a mental aberration that's going on and then it's hurting them. But if they didn't know it, how could that affect them? Well, they use other thought forms to tell the person mentally that you are being destroyed and you are being hurt. And they get that message, and then they feel the pain wherever the pin is stuck into the voodoo doll. Now, these are very unusual things. Who wants to be part of that? But we are part of that, because it's part of the mind philosophy, part of the mind psychology. And these are things that people are working with, things that people are thinking about, things that happen in everyday life. Now, we want to know about this, not that we want to use it. We want to know about it, because when people come to us and say, what about this alternative medicine? What about the holistic medicine fields? We say, yes, that's very good. That's very interesting. And it is. And it works. The medicine of the medical doctor, it works too. The medicine of mama and the kiss, it works too. The medicine of all these varieties of things work in one way or another. All they do is to balance up the system. Now, we can learn how to balance the system through the use of our thought. And as we balance the system through the use of our thought, then we put everything in perfect right order. Now, how do you want to put everything in perfect right order? You say, I am now balanced. You sit back and relax and you say, I am now balanced. I am harmonious. I am balanced. And you say that, you say that, you say, now, if you have a headache, if you have a heartache, relationship, if you have anything else, you just say, I am balanced. And when you say you're balanced, then what you're doing, you're talking to all of the organ action functions of your body to work harmoniously with you to achieve the goal you have for yourself. Now you say, how can mental thoughts control relationships? Well, just the way voodooism works. It's by thought about anything, and people tune into that thought, or that thought is tuned into the people, and then they respond in some way to that thought. Now, you say, golly, if this is so great, if this works so great, why don't people use it? Well, people do. I have mentioned this before. In the world are 6 billion people, maybe 7 or 8 now. People keep growing, and they don't take the census only every 10 years. So, let's say maybe even 10 billion people. It's an easy figure to work with, tens. So there are 10 billion people on Earth. And there are, let's say, 300,000 prisons on Earth, maybe more. Maybe a prison in every city or whatever. And there are people in these prisons who are convicted of something or other. And the number of people in these prisons is less than 0.001% of the total population. Very tiny. You know, when you take 10 billion people and you take the total number of people in prison. Now, there's our bad people, so to speak. They're in prison, and that's 0.001%. That's a hundredth of a percent or thousands of a percent, whatever it works out to be. Now let's look at the hospitals. People who go to hospitals or clinics or anything related to acupuncture, acupressure, the alternative medicines, any of these country doctors, any of these things, wherever they may be, add them all up. And again, you come to 0.001% of the total population that uses the hospital. Maybe less, maybe far less. And you say, well, what about the number of people who are sick that go to the hospitals? Well, add another 0.5%. And what have you got? You got a lot of people. But you don't have a lot of people compared to the number of people on earth. Now, consider this. What is it that these people are using for healing remedies for themselves? Only 0.01% of the people are in the hospitals, and the rest of the people don't have access to hospitals or doctors or don't use it. What are they doing? How do they get well? They get well by mental attitudes. They get well by using mental thoughts. They get well by using the mind. Now, what is that for the number of people who are using the mind? That's almost 6 billion people, minus a couple of hundredths percent, but almost 6 billion people. You understand? 10 billion people. If we get the numbers right here yet. But 6 billion, 10 billion, whatever they are. That's a lot of people who are not sick, who are not with problems. And if they have any problems, they solve them using the mind. If this is the case, and so many people are solving their problems with the mind, then it must work. It must work, or else they would need to go to the hospital. But it must work. And if it works, are they writing it down? Are they making it available to everybody? Or is it something that some people know and some people don't? Where is the information on that? How do they know about that? How do they know how to make it work? Well, they know by listening within. They know by going to the center of their own being and being aware of what's going on in their consciousness. And they can do this very easily. Very, very easily. They just quietly sit there. And let's say 10 billion people on earth. Are these people busy all the time? No. Are they working long jobs every day? No. Are they oftentimes working jobs where they're sitting down? Yeah. Are they people who are meditative type people? Very much so. What are they meditating about? They're meditating about things that are beneficial to them. They're meditating that my body is whole and perfect. I live in my whole and perfect body. I have a wonderful family. I have a wonderful world. I have a wonderful life. Everything is going beautiful for me. They say these things. They say, they don't go around not saying these things. They go around saying these things to exercise them as a practice in their life. And as they exercise them, what happens? As they exercise them, they get the results. They get the results of a whole body. Now, these are 10 billion people on earth. The number of other people is so fractional it hardly counts, but there are 10 billion people on earth. And these 10 billion people are practicing holistic medicine. In every city in the world, in every countryside, in every little house in the world, people are practicing holistic medicine. And they're practicing holistic medicine. Why? Because that's all they know. That's all they believe. That's all they hear. They hear their grandmother telling them things. They hear their shaman telling them things. We hear them as the minister tells things. The minister is teaching positive thinking and wholeness thinking. He's teaching Christian thinking. He's teaching the teachings of Christianity, which are healing, mental healing. He's teaching the teachings of every other philosophy, the Hinduism, Buddhism, shamanism. He's teaching every philosophy in the world, all teaching holistic healing. If holistic healing is so prominent and so powerful, why is it that it is not? It doesn't have a better press? Why is it people don't speak better of it? Well, people who find things that work for them do it, and they don't tell anybody else about it. There's a technique, and you probably know about it. I may have mentioned it before. There's a technique that mothers use with their children oftentimes. Some of the children are ill, and some of the children are not. So the mothers take the urine from the children who are not ill and mix it with some water or mix it with some sugar or whatever that make it palatable, and they give it to the children who are sick. And the children who are sick get well almost immediately. What's going on with these people that when they drink a tiny cup of urine, that they get well? Well, this is the case, and this doctors know. In your body are all of the activities that go on for healing. Your body is exuding chemicals, which are immune chemicals, which protect the body and heal the body. And so when a person is healthy, he's got all these things in abundance within him. And they're in his urine, they're in his blood, they're in his everything. So if one child is sick, the mother will take the urine from the other child who's not sick, who's whole and well, and feed that to the child who is sick. They won't let them know what they're drinking, you know. It'd shake them up a little bit, maybe. But they do that. And the kid becomes well, because the immune system of the healthy child is in his urine, and all of the aspects of that immune system are in his urine. And so when the sick child drinks this, the sick child gets well. They have books out on this. It's quite interesting. And people who drink their own urine every day, maybe just a little shot glassful or so, live healthier, more fulfilled lives, because they're recycling their immune benefits that are in their body. Now just imagine if you had a family of a number of kids, and some of your kids were really healthy, really healthy, and so you preserve some of their healthy urine. Now that'd be interesting to figure out how to do that, not have it spoiled, but to preserve some of their healthy urine, and then when anybody in the family was ill, to have a concoction of that urine and feed it to them to bring health to them, or give them right off the cow, you know, right off the fat. And that works good. Now, how does that work? How does that work? How does that work that the urine does this wonderful thing? Simple. The body has all these activities in it. The body is a healing body. The body is a self-perpetuating body, a self-regenerating body. The body takes care of itself in every possible way, and when you have urine, the urine has it in. Now, it's in the blood too. When people take a blood transfusion, they are transfusing all of the healthy attitudes that that other person, which is the immune system of the other person and all of the other activities that are beneficial, and put it into this person who is ill and needing the blood. It's quite something. Of course, there's always that chance that there's something in that person's blood that might be not good, and that gets passed along too. And if the other person's immune system can't handle that, he might get that condition, and that has happened many times. So again, the urine appears to be the most favored and the most beneficial way to pass through these immune cells to the body. And it's done all the time. We have a couple of volumes of the book, and it's a very interesting story, very interesting concept. Now, do you think that mama, grandma, auntie, people who are sitting around all day trying to say, what shall I do? How shall I work on this? What shall I do? And they go out and get the herbs of the field, and they get the mushrooms, and they get all the other things, and try it. And then the thought comes, use Junior's urine. Junior is healthy as a fox. Use his urine. Just a little bit of his urine would make his brother well. And so auntie goes and gets a little bit of urine from the other kid and gives it to the sick boy, and he gets well. Now, if Auntie would go around telling people that, they'd think she was crazy. And of course, she is crazy. She is listening to her inner voice, and her inner voice says, it's your medicine chest. It's a natural medicine chest. It's far better than any medicine chest you get from doctors, because in that medicine chest from the urine, it is so pure. Your urine is so pure. It's so unbelievably pure because it has been processed and filtered and processed and filtered so many times before it finally goes into your urine. It goes fast. I mean, when you drink a lot of water, it goes fast. But it is very pure. If you choose to look it up in Wikipedia, or if you choose to look it up in any encyclopedia, any place, or if you choose to do however, look it up and you'll find that human urine as a healing agency is quite popular, especially in China. In China, it has been used perhaps more than any place else, but it works. It's an amazing thing how urine works. Now, this is a folk medicine, and it's a folk medicine. Now, another folk medicine that I have my students use from time to time is special drink, a lemonade drink. In it is maple syrup, like a cup of maple syrup, and a little
lemon juice.
Yeah, a little dash of lemon juice and a few shakes of cayenne pepper. Cayenne pepper is a detoxifier. And I have people drink that for just before we have our seminars, before we have our health seminars, when you have them. And when they drink that, they feel so purified. Then I say, now if you'll drink it only for 2 or 3 days, just drink this. And drink like a gallon a day. You watch what happens. And people drink it a gallon a day, and it purifies their body, it rinses out their body, and detoxifies their body, and they feel like jumping over the moon. They have so much energy, which has been now released. And I have sent out information on that many times. I'm sure you have it in some literature too. But it's a very positive thing. It's not harmful. It's very good. The only thing is, if you have a low sugar diet, you shouldn't use that, because maple syrup is very high in sugar, so you have a great deal of sugar coming through there. But that shouldn't bother you either, because when you use this, how it's to be used, you have great things happen to that. This is another folk medicine. This one, our modern age folk people from Hawaii who thought of this and sent out his little booklet on it and telling all about it. It's very fascinating. Then when you go over to the Polynesian Islands, you run into people who are doing their folk medicines and doing their folk programs. And their folk programs are so strange and so unique, but they function beautifully. They function beautifully, and they work for them, and they work for us as we work them. These things are amazing and lots of fun. Alternative medicines open the mind to flow naturally. During the Second World War, at least, I'm sure other times too, they did a lot of mental work. They did a lot of mental studies, and they used patients from hospitals, and they used people, and they had little regard for whether the people were alive or dead to do these things, because they were prisoners who were prisoners of war or something like that, and they're expendable. And it's not the way it should be, not the Geneva Conference that allows that, but that's the way it's done. So much research was done using these people on how the mind works, and how fear works, and how tension works. I mean, all the terrible things we wouldn't want to do, they were doing with these prisoners of war. And they found out many wonderful things. They found out many things that would not have been found out over a lifetime, because it just is not the proper thing to do. It's not the proper thing to take this where it's going to kill a person, and you have no regard for it. All you want to do is, while he's alive, how is it responding? How is he taking it? What's it doing to him? This is what folk medicine does. folk medicine is doing that very same thing over the years by having people test these things, and there's no blind. Somebody's got a condition that has to be taken care of, and they do it. Now, you've all heard of the word tree painting. May be pronounced a little differently, but tree painting is the way I heard it. Tree painting is where a primitive man, almost a Neanderthal man, had a friend who had a head that hurt him so terribly. His brain was just giving him tremendous problems. And so this friend took a chisel out of stone and chiseled a hole in the top of the head so that the pain could ooze out. And the pain oozed out. The pressure was released. And then the stuff went back into the brain, into the cavity, and then they put the chipped off piece into the hole, and they tied it on there so it could grow back in, and it grew back in. Now, how do we know this? We know this in archaeology that has been done over people who have been buried and long gone, you know, many lifetimes ago, and then our scientists look at their head, and they see this, and they know that that was done purposely. That was done with some sort of device, and perhaps it was a sharp stone. You know, boing, boing, boing. You know, wouldn't that be something? People working on your head, no anesthesia. But that was trial and error. If they lost the guy, they lost the guy. If he gained it, they gained it. But the thing is, if they didn't do it, they sure were going to lose him too. First he'd go crazy from the pressure in his head. But isn't that interesting? That's on-the-job practice, learning how to be a surgeon. To cut in, and to know where to cut in, and not to cut too deeply. Your brain is one of the most resilient organs of your body. It heals itself. If it gets any type of injury, it immediately heals itself. Can anyone tell me another part of the body that does the same thing? Your mouth. Your mouth gets a scratch in there, a rip in there, a tear in there or something, and within a moment or two, it's back to normal again. Because you have to do it, otherwise you can't eat. And your anus does the same thing. If your anus is in some way cut or hurt because you're sitting on something bad that cuts you or what have you, as soon as you release that and let yourself relax there, it heals itself up very quickly. It has to. Because if it doesn't, you cannot defecate. You cannot let the food out of your body. You cannot do these things. And the same with your genital areas where the urine comes out. It heals itself very quickly. Your teeth, they heal themselves very quickly around your gums and so forth, because it has to. You have to be able to eat. You have to be able to move the stuff through your body. And so as the early people who were doing this type of research, looking into the naturalistic type of healing, as we call them here, holistic healing, as they looked into that, they found all these things. They found all these things and how they work and how they function and how they could make them function themselves. But you keep going back to one thing. How did they find out about these things? There were no schools. There were no scientific laboratories. There were no chemical testing stations where they could check out things. Somebody had to believe in what they were thinking, and that believe that what they were thinking was true. Somebody had to believe enough in what their, a mother had to believe enough in what she was thinking to apply something to her child. She didn't want to kill the child. The children died of enough things by themselves. She didn't want to contribute to it. So she listened and she heard, do this, and did it. Now, what is this tree? It has a name. It's a certain type of gum tree. It's in America, it's here. And what is the gum of that tree for? The gum of that tree, you might think of the name later, the gum of the tree is aspirin. This tree is the source of aspirin. And aspirin, as you know, is something that alleviates pain or headaches and different things in the body. Now, the early Indians used to chew on the bark of that tree whenever they had a problem. And it would put this aspirin through their whole system, and, you know, they were just feeling no pain. And they didn't keep it up, but they did. Now, in India, they have a material that they chew that makes their teeth brown and does all sorts of things to them. It is a medicine. It's a holistic medicine, but it's available, and it's so pleasant, and it gives them a high that they use it for getting the high rather than the medicine. And of course, it is so strong, it heals the teeth with a little bit, but with a lot, it makes the teeth fall out. And so a lot of them have no teeth because they chew it a lot, and then they can munch it with their gums. And the Mexican Indians do the same thing. American Indians may have too. I'm not familiar with all of their programs, but the Mexican Indians I am familiar with. And they had a lot of these type of holistic gums, these holistic programs, the different types of juju beans and various other things that they had. Very fascinating. Now, thought far outranks medicaments in its smooth response, in its effectiveness and speed of action. Whenever someone was deathly ill, someone was called in, usually the shaman, and they would throw around their little dust and they'd make their show and they'd put on a good show, and people would say, wow, how neat, you know. And then they'd say, you're whole and perfect, or whatever they'd say to the child or to the person, and they were whole and perfect. It was wonderful. But you see, just like Mandrake the magician, just like other types of magician tricks, they take this sprinkly stuff and put it on a little fire, and choom, choom, up comes off, and it's magic, you know. It's not magic, it's a piece of chemical. Well, it happens that Mandrake knew about that, and others didn't. And so he could use that to put on his show. And what was the benefit? Now, this is a very tremendously important point here. What was the benefit of putting on a show for people when he was teaching them holistic medicine? What was the benefit of putting on the show? Yeah? The benefit of putting on the show was they believed him. They believed he could do it. And they listened to him and learned, and they believed he could do it. And because they believed he could do it, it functioned for them. Because they believed in him, they believed what anything he did would work. Now, many of the things he did didn't work, but they worked because they believed in him. They worked because they had this unmitigated belief that this fellow did that. Like I tell Anita and Sylvia were with me at and Ellen as we went to David Copperfield, and Anita was sitting right close to where David was working, and she could see what he was doing. And she was watching, you know, checking him out, you know, making sure that everything he did was perfect, you know. And of course, she couldn't see anything wrong. And he did what he did, and her belief in him just soared, because she was right there. She was like looking right into his hands and his pockets on everything he did, and nothing could get by her, she felt. Well, obviously, something got by her, the technique. Maybe it was just all mental, and perhaps it was. Now, who is to say that the magic show of David Copperfield does not have to be, that it may not be all mental? It could very well be. It could very well be, or it could not be. Because sleight of hand is movement where you're not seeing what's happening, and you get fooled. But I believe a good portion of what David Copperfield does is mental. It is his conditioning to whatever he's doing that he can do it. And then it is his positioning of the people who are doubters, or who would be doubters, to look at what he was doing to make sure that he was doing it right. And he's not cheating. Of course, what is cheating? If you can make a car disappear and make it appear, that's pretty exciting by itself. Now, if you have a couple of drapes that it slides behind and comes before, that's cool too, you know, because why not, you know? But he didn't. How he did those things, we don't know. How he made the Empire State Building disappear for some 10, 20,000 people, we don't know. But all those people saw it disappear and believed it. Now, did it disappear? It's still there. It's still there. And I'm sure that the people, after they went off stage, they probably were off stage at the time because they were in front of the Empire State Building and they did it, you know, and had it completely disappear. Now, he could have taken them to the top of the Chrysler Building or some other building in New York and said, okay, now, watch. The Empire State Building, just watch the Empire State Building, without telling them even what's going to happen. Just say, watch the Empire State Building and you're going to see something very monumental, something very special. And the Empire State Building, like from here to across the street. And so you're up in an upper floor in the Chrysler Building and you're looking at the Empire State Building. And then he says, all right, now, he snaps his finger, it's gone. And they say, what, where is it? And they can see the buildings behind it. You know, it's not, it's just but invisible. They can see the buildings behind it. It is not there. It just is not there. What a mental attitude David Copperfield must have, creating in those people who are not realizing that it's created in them, that it's not there. Well, that is something to think about. It is certainly something mental, truly mental. Obviously, he didn't take it brick by brick and move it away. And he didn't take it in mass and have a helicopter haul it away. That's a pretty heavy deal. But he had it leave their mind. They no longer could see it. They no longer saw. Do you think he no longer saw it when he had that too? That's right. He had to have the same illusion that they had as he was going through it. Really quite exciting. And this is why I want to suggest that it is something of thought. It is our thought at work. Our thought is the greatest healing power in the universe. And I believe that David Copperfield was working 100% with thought. Oh, he had a few little illusions that he had out there by putting a drape over things and what have you, and just started getting people excited about that. But what he did was fantastic. And you see, these are things that you too can do, and you do. You do more illusionary work than you realize you do. You're using your mind to heal yourself more than you realize. And you're using your world to heal yourself more than you realize. It's up to you to make yourself aware of it. Now, I'm going to give you this phrase here. I use it always. I think that spiritual healing is the only kind of healing that we want to have. But spiritual healing is the most devastating healing that anyone could ever have. Spiritual healing is the most devastating healing that anyone could ever have. Why? Do you know? You're smiling because you know, or you're smiling because you're interested in finding out? Yeah. Spiritual healing is this. When you, let's say you have cancer, and you're dying of cancer, and you're just, nothing left, you're shriveled all up. And then you have a spiritual healing. How long does it take to get off the bed? If you have a spiritual healing, how long does it take to get off the bed if you're lying there with cancer and all shriveled up? How long does it take to get off?
It's instant.
I'm sorry?
Instant, if you believe.
Well, it's even more than that. You weren't there. When you have spiritual healing, you weren't there, and you're not even in the hospital. And nobody even knows you were in the hospital. Nobody knows that you had cancer, that you had a problem. Spiritual healing means that you're at your original purity and integrity. Nobody knows. The doctors have no report of you ever being a patient. Your family never knows of you having that illness. Nobody. That's spiritual healing. And that's tough. Because in spiritual healing, you have no way of saying that I had this, my appendix was out and stuff like that, you know. There's no way of you playing games with your illness. But spiritual healing, this is what I like each of us to learn how to do, is to experience spiritual healing for ourselves and for our world. Now, can you imagine, as I told you about the man who had no hand in that meeting I went to, if I had spoken my word and I said, I see you holding perfect, and his hand was there, and he had a spiritual healing, would he be in that room? Probably not. No reason for him to be there. He was there because he didn't have a hand. Would anyone miss him? They wouldn't even know that he was supposed to be there. Would his family ever remember that he missed his hand? Would he have it in the war activity where he lost his hand? Would that have taken place? No. Millions of people go through wars without losing hands, you know. So why not him too? But you see, a spiritual healing, to me, is so fantastic, so beautiful, so wonderful, and it takes place all the time. And you don't even know it. People come up to me and they say, Herb, I've got this problem, heal me. And I say, okay, you're healed. And then they walk away, and I see them later, and they don't have the problem. I don't say to them, hey, you had a problem, didn't you? Because that would bring it back. But they don't have, nobody except me knows that they had a problem. Nobody knows that they were ill, because now they're completely whole and perfect. Now, they don't appreciate that they are whole and perfect. They don't appreciate that they don't have a problem because they didn't do it for themselves. This is where the early practitioners taught people. They taught them to do it for themselves. They taught them to heal themselves. They taught them to put the cause in motion for themselves, for wholeness and perfection. It's wonderful. But people who have spiritual healing do not report anything about it to anybody because they don't know they were sick. And there's no report in any hospital, in their family, or anywhere else that they were sick. Nobody knows they were sick. They only know that they're whole and perfect. Interesting, isn't it? How is it that this works for you? How is it that this works for you on spiritual healing? What would have to take place for spiritual healing? What drug would you take? What chemicals would you take? What medicine would you take for spiritual healing? I'm sorry? Nothing. Nothing. What would you take? The mind. The thought. The thought is the cause of spiritual healing. Now, do you have anything that you want healed in your life? Then use your thought. Yes. And I'm saying this facetiously. Use your thought, and don't be surprised when it happens. Because when it happens, you won't know that it happens. And you won't know that it happened. You won't know that you ever had a problem. That's neat. But that's perfect spiritual healing. And many of the shaman, many of the folk medicine people, many of the folk doctors brought that about. It's fantastic. It's very simple, very beautiful, but very, very definite. Alrighty, interesting, huh? We could dwell on that for quite a while yet and come up with some interesting thoughts. Yes?
In the spiritual things, the belief implies in it, belief, because if you didn't believe, you wouldn't be spiritual.
I don't hear you.
What I'm talking in the spiritual healing,
Believe what?
If you believe that this thing will be done, whether something is being given to you.
To believe that you are spiritually healed?
Yes, the person you are healing or yourself, you believe that this thing must happen.
Well, in effect, that's true, but it works more, I think, like this. You go to either yourself or to someone who's working with you on your healing, and you say, I would be healed. And then the person says to you, do you believe that you can be? They don't say how, and they don't say spiritual healing. They just say, do you believe you can be? And if you say yes, then they say it's done unto you according to your belief. But more, if they're working with you very seriously, they say, it's done. Then you turn to them and you say, what are you doing here? You don't remember them being there as someone working with you on your healing, because you don't remember that you were ill. You don't remember that you had any problems. You don't remember any of these things. Now, this happens all the time, but nobody can tell you about it, because the minute it happens, you have amnesia as to the illness that you had had. You don't remember a thing. Amnesia is a very real and a definite thing. It does happen to people. They say a bonk on the head, you know. And sometimes you remember and sometimes you don't. Most of the time you don't. And there are more people around this world who have amnesia than you know. There are more missing fathers or mothers or whatever, even children, who are have amnesia, who have maybe gone through that transition from an illness to a wholeness. And whatever is their past is forgotten. Whatever is their world is forgotten. And that is spiritual healing. But it's not something that you can believe is going to happen. It's not something you can believe. You believe you can be healed. That's what you believe. You believe that your body can return to its original purity and integrity, but that you can have a spiritual healing. There's no belief that would generate that type of activity. It'd be nice to have it if it did, but it doesn't, because it is something that once it happens, and as often as it happens, you, I, anyone does not ever remember they had anything to heal. It's spectacular and fun. Yeah. Any other questions from anybody on anything? On this, that, or the other thing? Yes?
I believe that the spiritual healing.
You believe that?
It requires attention to spiritual directives. For example, if somebody approaches you for your healing, you just, within yourself, you are directed to speak on this water, give that person to drink, just like that, without asking whether you believe. You do it immediately, the person receives healing.
Who is it that you know who does spiritual healing? And this is someone you've read about.
Right.
Yeah, you, but Jesus. People came to Jesus and said, Jesus, heal me. And Jesus looked at them and he says, I don't see anything wrong. And they said, well, heal me. And he says, well, I am the Christ. I can only see you whole and perfect. Now, what do you want to see yourself? I want to be whole and perfect. Then it is done unto you according to your belief. Now, no other person can ever do anything for us except ourselves. They can help us to understand it. Understand is the wrong word there. They can help us to realize that we can be healed, that we can enjoy wholeness, but they can't do it for us. But it's not something on the outside. It's something that happens almost instantaneously. If you go to David Copperfield and you doubt his show, you'll be looking there and you'll be looking for all sorts of ways that he is cheating, and you won't see where he didn't cheat. Because you'll be looking for how he cheated. You'll be looking for how he fooled the audience instead of looking at what he had actually done. Did I answer a little bit of what you had? Please? Yes? Okay. Because I didn't thoroughly understand what you said, but I got the gist. I want to answer all you guys perfectly, but I do speak English, and you do too, but you speak a dialect English, and that I don't understand. And I have nothing against your dialect English, except I don't understand it. And I'd like to make sure that I understand everything that's in your mind. Well, our last point here that we have done, man responds to holistic medicine found in the wilds, available to beings who listen within to know which herbs to utilize and how. You know. I had a secretary who was 77 years old at the time she came to me, and she was just a terrific lady. Well, she would go out when she wasn't working. She'd lay on the ground, put her feet up against a tree, and she'd talk to the trees with her feet. And then she'd go out and she'd pick up herbs from around the property, all over the place, and she'd bring them in, and she'd say, "Herb, I want you to try this." "No, thank you." "No, thank you. But you go ahead, do what you want to do. I mean, you know, happy to see you, enjoy everything." And then I had another one who's with us now, Ingeborg Puckert. She's from Italy and from Germany and so forth, and she's an amazing lady. But she thinks, and perhaps she does, but she thinks she knows all of the reliable mushrooms. And she thinks she knows all the reliable wild plants. And she brings them in the kitchen. And she wants to prepare them for us to eat. And I say, "No, thank you." I don't eat proven foreign foods, even when I go to foreign countries, because I don't want to upset my stomach. And I'm certainly not going to eat this unproven thing here. Now, that you eat it doesn't mean a thing. Her stomach is cast iron. She eats the craziest mixed up stuff you could imagine. She puts pepper and salt on everything. She puts cayenne. She likes to spread cayenne pepper on her bread like peanut butter. And I said, "You're crazy. You make a good Mexican. You have a wonderful capacity." But she's just like that. And she wanted us to be like that. And if we were, we probably would have that cast iron stomach like she does. And she has no illnesses. She has no illnesses. But I like to kick her hard, hard, hard. She has no illnesses. But, oh, that's okay. She has no illnesses. But you know what she did? She looked at somebody else who was buying some pills. And she says, "I want to buy pills too." And I said, "All right, what pills do you want to buy?" "The same stuff she's buying." And I said, "Well, you don't know what she's buying that for, and why? Just be thankful you don't have what she needs it for. But I want it too." You know, like the kids. If somebody's got a bike, I want a bike too, you know. And somebody's doing these things, I want it too. We had a bunch of kids on campus one time, and they were all 7, 8, 9. And one little girl had to have triple thick lenses. And the rest of the kids felt they were cheated because they didn't have glasses. So we had to take them in and show them that they didn't need glasses. The doctor said, "You don't need them. You got perfect eyes. You're perfect eyes. You're perfect eyes." And they heard it from an authority, so they believed they had perfect eyes. But isn't that silly how we want to play the game? We want to do what other people do, even if it marks us as having a problem, which we don't have and we don't need to have. We'll be talking some more about this a little bit, but this holistic medicine is beautiful, but the mental, metaphysical medicine is the greatest medicine in the world because it really works, and it also doesn't cost anything at all, and it also doesn't have any side effects. You know what side effects are? Yeah. Doesn't have any side effects. That's kind of nice, isn't it? Okay, any other questions? I think we have come to our half point right here.
Yes.
Any other questions on anybody at this point? I guess this afternoon we have a couple questions and then we have another lecture, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to share with you. You have a question? Peter, you always come up after the bell's rung, but that's okay. Ask the question, we'll be, Peter, ask the question and we'll be ready for you when we have our question and answer time. What is your question? Say it.
Okay. It's a very simple question.
And
does a practitioner charge any fee for his treatment, or is it a selfless service?
Does a practitioner change anything?
Charge.
Yes. Charge?
Yes, any fee for his work, or it is a selfless service.
Or does it what?
Selfless service.
Free service.
Free service. I'll answer it quickly right away. The thing is, every man is worthy of his hire. And I guarantee you, his son, Ugo, that's your son, isn't it? Ugo? Ugo went to school and he studied medicine and he became a medical doctor. Did he do it for free?
No.
Then he went to psychiatric school and he became a psychiatrist. Is he doing it for free? No. What would you think of him if he did it for free? You wonder, what's the matter? Doesn't he have any business? Is he no good? Nobody wants to go to him, you know? If what you get for free is usually worth it. And a practitioner in metaphysics that treats you for free is not worth a grain of salt. A practitioner should charge a specific fee. Maybe they can forego the fee if you can't afford it or something. But the thing is, they charge a fee. And if they don't charge a fee, I wouldn't go to them. Because they don't believe in themselves, and they won't do you any good except to talk your arm off, you know. You understand me?
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you're taking the course of the University of Healing, and you get it for free, you get it for a scholarship or something like that, be careful. You're not going to study, you're not going to gain things from it, and you won't benefit. And if you don't plan with your scholarship to pay it back sometime, sincerely to pay it back, you won't get any benefit from it. But if you want to really get benefit from it, plan on paying as you go for it so that you get the benefit. Because whatever you get for nothing is usually worth it. Even if you go to the university and you spend 4 years at the university taking a course and somebody else paid for it and you're not working hard for it, but if you're working for it and you're going to school and you're taking a side job to help pay your way through school, you're going to work like a devil to get through there. Because you want to get the end result and you value the training that you're getting. And if you don't value the training you're getting from your practitioner, it's no sense having a practitioner. No sense having a practitioner. Sorry that I answered it right now, but it's... When these things do come up, they're kind of important. A lot of people want free practitioner work. Now, they go to the churches and the practitioners work with them as a love offering. You give them a love offering, but you should pay. You should pay. And people ask me what I charge, and I tell them. When I was in real estate business, I charged $400 to $500 an hour for counseling on real estate. And I was good. And now that I'm in a practitioner, I charge $400 to $500 an hour for practitioner work. And I'm good. And I get results. And people have wonderful things happen to them. I was in Switzerland, and one of my students said, "What should we charge?" And I said, "Well, that's what I charge." He says, "Okay, I'll charge it." And then I said, "Well, you've got to get paid too." And he says, "Well, I'll take half." I said, no, you got to get full pay because you're working on this as much. If she wants me alone, that's good. If she wants both of us, then she pays for both. You understand?
Yes.
Now, it just happened that her husband was a famous architect, wealthy as sin, and money was of no account. Of all accounts, you should not let them not pay for it, you know. But she paid, and she got results. She got instant results from our counseling. Really amazing, not amazing, but really delightful to see that happen. But you get what you pay for in this life. You buy a bargain clothing, and it's usually something that's a bargain. It comes apart. It's badly sewn or something. So think about that. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And Jesus used the phrase, every man is worthy of his hire. Remember? And Jesus talked about the paying the people for working. And you get paid a penny for the day. You get paid a penny for the day. You start in the middle of the day. And you come the last hour, you still get paid a penny for the day. Oh, that's not fair. Sure, it's fair. It's what we agreed upon. And if you don't think what's fair is what you agreed upon, then you're not an honest, reliable person. I love you. Any more questions?
No.